1062 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A lavish ceremony in Pyongyang where two autocrats have come together to profess mutual admiration. Russian President Vladimir Putin is making his first trip to North Korea in 24 years. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
Putin and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un have signed a partnership deal expanding economic and military ties. Putin, on his first visit there in 24 years, is seeking munitions for his war in Ukraine. Pyongyang, in return, could receive economic assistance. There have been growing concerns among the U.S. and its allies about an arms agreement between the two countries.
Putin drove Kim in a Russian-made Auris limousine he gifted him today. People along the U.S. Gulf Coast are bracing for what's expected to be the first named storm of the hurricane season. Odyssey meteorologist Craig Allen.
This is a very large storm, so tropical storm warnings are in effect not only for the Mexico coastline, but the Texas coastline as well, from about near the Houston and Galveston area all the way down to the Texas-Mexico border.
At least one death is blamed on a wind-whipped wildfire tearing through southern New Mexico. 5,000 people have been forced from their homes.
We've seen other fires, but nothing like this.
An oppressive heat dome is set to break temperature records from Ohio to Maine. At least 11 people were injured when a two-story house collapsed in Syracuse, New York. Fire Chief Michael Mons.
Never seen anything like this before, and not many people have, with this many people that are trapped in a structure so small.
Firefighters responded to reports of an explosion. They found many of the victims in the front yard and at least one in a car buried in the rubble. A giant has died.
Say hey, say who, say Willie.
One of the most famous baseball players ever, Hall of Famer Willie Mays, was 93. One of his standout plays, an over-the-shoulder catch in the 1954 World Series. Giants fans are paying tribute in San Francisco.
I was born and bred a Giants fan, coming to games since I was 7 years old. For me at my age, it's hard to imagine living in a world where he's not here.
The mayor of Paris is daring to go where not many have gone before. Not recently, anyway. Anne Hidalgo is promising to bathe in the Seine River to prove the water's perfectly fine for swimmers to dive in at the Summer Olympics. With a month to go, tests still show unsafe levels of E. coli. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Donald Trump tells a rally in Wisconsin Tuesday that he wants to be the law and order president.
I will be the president for law-abiding Americans, every background, every walk of life, every race, religion, color, and creed. I'll be the president.
Trump was convicted of 34 felonies in a recent hush money trial. Trump campaigned in Racine. Wisconsin's Supreme Court will hear a challenge to Governor Evers' 400-year school funding increase. Evers used his line-item veto to make changes that give Wisconsin schools a per-pupil funding boost for the next four centuries. Wisconsin governors have sweeping veto powers, but the courts have put limits on striking single words or letters. Justices announced Monday that they will take the case. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers bounce back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers jumped out to an early lead and held on to beat the Angels in Anaheim 6-3. Toby Myers good on the mound through seven scoreless innings. Christian Yelich with his 200th career home run. And how about Jackson Chourio turning a double into a three-run inside the park Little League home run, top of the fourth on Bally Sports Wisconsin.
Churio down the right field line, just over the bag and into the corner it goes. Frelick will score. Sanchez, he's going to score as that ball gets away from Adell. Churio thinking about home. The throw is late. Churio with a belly flop. He goes all the way around to score. Three runs are in.
Pat Murphy asked if he knew Chirio could run that fast.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's got that kind of speed. He's got that kind of talent.
Hockey, the Florida Panthers missing a chance to win a Stanley Cup at home. They lost to the Oilers 5-3. The series now moves to Edmonton, with the Panthers still up 3-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy and highs in the low 70s. A chance of a shower tonight, otherwise mostly cloudy and a low of 57. Showers and thunderstorms Thursday, highs back to the mid-70s. For Thursday night, showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly cloudy and lows near 62.
Currently, 66 degrees.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, the executive director of Block joins us. Angela Lang will be here in hour number two, public cervix announcement with Dr. Laura Hanks. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. This is 93.5 The Tap.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Along with the new master of Studio A2 at the top of State Street, just off the Capitol Square in Madison, Luke Mathers down at Civic Media HQ, in for Greg Bach today. Greg will be back next week. Brittany Merlot will be back tomorrow. And I have bad news for folks that love to hear Joe Zepecki on Thursday mornings at 6:30. Joe is busy this week. He will not be our guest tomorrow morning at 6:30. But Luke Mathers will be, because Luke will be here tomorrow. And we'll be talking all about tonight's finale of Top Chef.
And Wisconsin. Don't worry, listeners. I am as equally disappointed, because I love listening to some Joe Zepecki. So I apologize. Yeah.
And he, you know, I asked you in the last hour about being happy for Drew Holiday getting a ring with the Celtics, and it was Mr. Zepecki. He was the first one to say, "I don't know about this trade," you know, trading away Drew Holiday and what that would mean to the, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks defense. You know, he wanted to defer to others who wanted to say, yeah, "Great trade. This is all going to work out just fine." And look, it's been fun having Damian Lillard on the team, but ultimately, Drew Holiday's getting a ring.
Well, you know, and part of it, I think it's important to put into context, is there was no way to know that Portland was going to go right around and trade Drew Holiday. Like, we did not trade Drew Holiday to the Boston Celtics. Like, right. I think that a lot of people that are just going, "I told you so, this was a bad idea," are, like, acting of it from a mindset that Milwaukee sent Drew Holiday to Boston. And
no, but Joe was right up there saying, just wherever he went, by losing him, we were, yes, losing a very important piece of the defense.
Yes. And that was very clear in the first half of play. I think it's why am I blanking on, I can picture his face, right? Adrian Griffin. Sorry. Yes. I'm so sorry, Griff. I was like, I can see his face right now. but yeah, it's why we let Adrian Griffin go halfway into the season, when honestly, We should have just maybe stayed with Griff, because we had a better record, even though the defensive effort was not what it had previously been in seasons past. The offense was really cooking with gas. Those, like, we were 34-8 or 34-10 or something like that when we let Griffin go.
And I'm just saying, from my outside perspective, the trade wasn't the issue. Well, it was, but the frosting on top was, Doc Rivers had no heart for doing this job.
I think that was a much bigger indicator. Like, the trade, how late it was, because it was literally like days, if not just a few weeks, before teams started getting ready for preseason games. And so, like the season was kind of already in its uptick. Like, it was a relatively late in the calendar year for an off season trade to occur. It happened late. And so Damian Lillard still had his entire family in Portland. He was not fully in Milwaukee for the season, because he was I think a lot of his mind and heart was still in Portland. Rightfully so. He played 13 seasons there. And so it was late in the game, but it was working to start, and then adding on the coaching turmoil that occurred when the Bucks front office decided to let Adrian Griffin go was really what threw, because they were only a few games back from Boston at that point when Griff got fired, but it was just turbulence that could not be righted in the ship. And then when you have all of a sudden some late season,
I forgot
injuries.
My Greg Bach, for folks wondering, I forgot my Greg Bach buzzer. He's supposed to buzz me after we've spoken about sports for a certain period of time.
Oh, what?
So that people don't think we're drifting into sports talk radio over here. So yes, there's
I've been buzzed, folks. Much I've like, been buzzed. I'm so sorry.
Just like Roy Kent going, whistle. We'll go with buzzer.
Yeah, there you go.
But in other sports news, the Milwaukee Brewers won the game late 6-3. The Angels had two men on. They'd already scored three in the bottom of the ninth, tying runs at the plate. And Sal Frelick makes an amazing catch. And you don't have to cue up Brian Anderson on the call necessarily, unless you had that or Jeff Levering standing by. But just an amazing catch to end the game.
Yeah, it was an incredible catch.
And so they'll do it.
Center field. Frelick is there. He leaps and he makes the catch. Oh my goodness. Saves the game. Sal Frelick.
So there it is. That was the last out of the game. Brewers win. They'll do it again one more time in Anaheim. Pregame starting at 8:00 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. We also noted in baseball the passing of Willie Mays yesterday at the age of 93. You know, one of the all-time legends in the game as well. So let's see, do we hit all the sports there? Right off the top, we did the Brewers, we did Willie Mays.
Jordan Love's expected to get a pretty big contract extension coming up here in the next couple days.
I think we discussed on Monday that folks don't get hung up on the dollar number, because it's too easy to get jaded. I mean, the number is what the number is based on, you know, what's floating around in the NFL these days.
He's
gonna be
the second highest paid quarterback, most likely.
Right.
It might be third, because Trevor Lawrence for the Jaguars just got a very large contract extension, but it's gonna be a lot of money that Jordan Love, like, and he took the team to the playoffs way farther than anybody anticipated him to be able to go in his first season as a starter. So it's going to be interesting.
Did you hear the listeners all yelling buzzer at their radio? Buzzer! Buzzer!
See, this is the memo that I did not receive from Greg when I told him I was filling in for the week. I put it on him. It's Greg, you got to tell me about the buzzers.
There you go. Brittany will be back tomorrow, but we always have weather from Rob in Tigerton, who says, good morning from Tigerton. It's partly cloudy and 71. Another busy day mowing in Tigerton. I love the dirt track racing. And for me, I haven't followed NASCAR since Dale Earnhardt was killed at the 2001 Daytona 500, which takes us back to sports talk now here at 7:13, because Rob,
that was such a quick pivot. It was like quick weather sports.
Rob, I am completely and totally in agreement with you when I say I haven't really watched since the teams, you know, the whole team concept. That to me was what did it. That you had one, I forget the drivers now, which one was blocking or doing what for whom, but if that hadn't been going on, that crash wouldn't have happened. I was really getting into NASCAR for like the 2, 3, 4 years prior to that, and it really soured me after that. I really thought about that team kept a lot, and I'll go back to a dirt track anytime, you know, watching again individuals racing. But it's kind of like golf. We're really going into sports here with the live golf and going into a team thing that way. I don't want the team. I've got team sports. I'm good with the team. Let's just keep this going now. Did you watch any of the Olympic trials on NBC over the past couple of nights?
Saw...
Did you see they put an Olympic swimming pool in a stadium in Indianapolis? That was amazing.
Is it Lucas Oil?
Yes. Yeah. They built an Olympic-sized swimming pool in the football field. Yes.
Oh.
You know, big old platform, and then put a pool in there. And
you
so
gotta
they set
really,
records.
Really hope that there's no leaks or anything like that
well,
nature
yeah.
for an Olympic-sized
well,
pool.
That's union craftsmanship right there, my
yeah,
friend. And
true.
So they set attendance records of 20,000 plus for indoor swimming. But when you consider what have the crowds been like for Badger women's volleyball and Nebraska and other places, and now for women's basketball. So why wouldn't swimming look at that and go, hey, hold my chlorine, you know, and build a pool in a football stadium. I think that I was amazed. I thought that was great that they pulled that off.
I saw some of the clips from the trials, but I had no idea the context that the pool that they were swimming in was in Lucas Oil.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, no. We're getting a reaction from Tony and Hayward. All this sports talk. I love it. Thanks, Tony. We appreciate that. I'd better then skedaddle over to some news headlines here because Donald Trump was in Wisconsin yesterday. The former president claiming, I love Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee. He didn't say it in Milwaukee, of course. He won't step foot in it until the convention. And even then, reportedly, he'll probably go right back to his Trump hotel in Chicago. Now, he was confronted with that yesterday by a reporter from TMJ, I believe. And he denied it, and the campaign's now saying, oh, yeah, there might be a reception at the Trump Hotel in Chicago, but he's staying there. At which point, you know, every Motel 6 clerk around Milwaukee says, we're booked. And by the way, Luke, somebody put on social media the other day, home price, VRBO prices start at like $4,000 a night, which... Again, if you've got a bunch of Republicans coming in and you're thinking, hey, they got money, I'll move out of my house for $4,000 a night. But the social media post came from somebody who was planning to be in Milwaukee that week for a memorial service for a family member. But of course, there's no hotel rooms to be found. VRBOs are going for, you know, $1,000 to $4,000 a night. It's not going to be good for people that want to be in Milwaukee they don't care about the convention, don't care about it at all, but they have to be in Milwaukee for some other reason. That's going to be some bad timing.
Yeah, it's going to be very unfortunate. And it's not just the RNC convention that's driving up some of those prices. The NFL draft now is coming to Green Bay less than a year from now. I saw listings that, like, you could rent for like the weekend. I think it was $18,000, I think. For one of the homes near Lambeau, you could have for the weekend, but it would cost you a pretty penny of $18,000.
But we just talked about the kind of money that Jordan Love is going to be making and all these
kids. I don't think he's the one that needs to get the rental for that weekend.
I know, but I'm saying all these kids, I put in quotation marks, who are about to be drafted and who are about to become multi-zillionaires the moment their name is called. And they know that it's coming, so why wouldn't some of their family members, you know, say, yeah, let's go up to Green Bay. So are you going to charge them the same $89 that you'd normally charge at a Hampton Inn? No. You're gonna try to get a little bit more out of it. Yeah. So it's, again, I would just caution everybody, it's a little farther away from the Republican convention, but in Sun Prairie, Luke Mathers has a guest room that he's working on, and he'll make you breakfast as well.
No, I'm pretty sure I've got to be at my folks in Milwaukee to cover the RNC. I'm on backup, I believe. So.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be, I'll be trying to figure out the traffic patterns and getting into the security clearances and all that fun stuff.
Well, good for you. I get asked about that repeatedly. And I'm just like, no, at my age, I'm staying right here in Chippewa Falls. I can follow it all online. I can follow it on TV. I'll be fine. I've been to conventions. There's nothing extra that I'd really get by having a badge and being in the crowd there. I'm not a first stringer, I'm not for sure going to be there.
Playing backup.
You just got promoted. You're now the Up North News Radio morning correspondent out there in Milwaukee. So get set to set some early alarms, my friend. It's going to be fun. Pat, it's 6 a.m. in Milwaukee. Nothing's happening. Thanks, Luke. It's Wednesday, June 19th, the Juneteenth federal holiday. We'll get back to Trump's visit to Racine yesterday next. You're Up North.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Hi, folks. This is Carrie Joy with your Work Buddy Minute and a thought about how to spend less when you're shopping online. As a busy mom, I know that online shopping can be convenient. Sometimes a little too convenient. Today's tip is don't fall for the free shipping. You know that moment when you've got the thing you were looking for in your online shopping cart and, oh, look, if you just add like 11 more bucks of stuff, you can get some free shipping? Before you click on that fancy pair of socks that you really don't need, go check the actual shipping costs. It's usually still cheaper to pay for shipping. I mean, you really think those companies are offering free shipping just because they're nice? We all love deals. But when you're trying to save money, if you don't need a thing, think twice before buying the thing. For more savings tips, head over to workmoney.org, check out my videos on YouTube, or text MONEY, M-O-N-E-Y, to 88285. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt and Air on Air.
On today's history lesson a little bit earlier, we learned that Ann Wilson from Hart is 74 years old today. Remember, you can get our daily newsletter. We took a break today for the Juneteenth holiday, but you can get signed up over at upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner and get yourself subscribed to our daily updates there. All right, we were discussing former President Donald Trump's trip to Racine and talking about Milwaukee and saying that he loved Milwaukee, even though it looks like he might be staying in Chicago, even though he says he might not. There were other takeaways from the event as well. And so I want to make sure that I give proper credit to Molly Beck, Rachel Hale, Hope Carnop from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. As Matt in Germantown writes in on the text line, I will rent out our spare room for the RNC free for Civic Media staff. There you go, Luke. You got a place to stay, an alternative place.
We're going to have to find out. Yeah, we're going to have to find Matt's information and then hold him to it.
See, Matt, careful what you wish for. Anyway, looking at the Journal Sentinel write-up on various takeaways. First off, there was the Trump making a comment about Milwaukee being a horrible city when he was talking in what he thought was a private meeting with House Republicans. As you can imagine, a lot of Trump supporters were unfazed by this because they too believe Milwaukee is a horrible city or that crime is out of control. There was one man from Edgerton who said, quote, it's clear as day Trump was referring to crime. It's horrible. Everyone knows it. I like Milwaukee. I'm a Brewers fan. I go to the state fair, but the crime is getting bad. To the reporter's credit, the very next line says, Milwaukee saw double-digit drops in percentages in homicides, car theft, and property crime from 2022 to 2023. The crimes are up compared to 2019, but again, there's always going to be a trend upward in things like, you know, wages, inflation, prices. As populations go up, you're going to see it's a city, folks. It's a city. If we were holding the convention in Washburn County, we could do a whole bunch of stories about, you know, domestic abuse and substance use. I'm up here in Chippewa County. We deal with homeless issues. We're working with a group that constructs tiny houses so that people are able to be housed there. There are troubles everywhere, but people will see the troubles that they want to see. Trump really went off the rails claiming that a new announcement from President Biden yesterday dealing with immigration is part of a secret plan to create new voters for Democrats. According to President Biden's announcement, thousands of immigrants who are married to U.S. citizens would be protected from deportation and be allowed to work while they seek permanent legal status. Trump characterized the plan as a Democratic project to allow hundreds of thousands of immigrants to vote. Biden plans, the Journal Sentinel story says, to allow undocumented spouses and their children to apply for permanent resident status without leaving the country if they meet certain criteria. Nothing in the order allows them to vote unless they become citizens. And again, voting is for citizens. It's always worked that way. It seems like every time we've got a story coming up about voter fraud and somebody voting illegally, it's been a Trump supporter for some reason or another. But in Racine, Trump characterized the plan as, quote, a direct attack on American democracy, and yet another example of how Biden and his communists are demolishing our constitutional system and replacing it with a corrupt and fascist regime. Trump said the plan will be ripped up and thrown out the very first day that we're back in office. You know what they're trying to do? They're trying to sign these people up and register to vote, said Trump, without evidence. They're not citizens. They're not allowed to do it. It's illegal as hell. Again, Donald Trump making stuff up. There are already plenty of voter safeguards, and there is absolutely zero awareness of how we need to reform immigration in this country. The numbers are not on the side of people that just want a whole bunch of, you know, white American-born workers to fill all the job vacancies out there. We need immigration reform. One group is interested in getting it done. If they become citizens and if they become voters, that's what good citizenship is all about. We're going to learn all about it in our next segment about the importance of a civics education and an appreciation for government service and what it can do when government is stewarded by people who appreciate public service. But for Trump and others, it's all about just demonizing a particular group of people. Trump again repeated his familiar false claim that he claims he performed better in Wisconsin in 2020 compared to 2016. He did get more raw votes, but in 2016, he beat Hillary Clinton by more than 22,000 votes. And when it came to Joe Biden, he lost by about 21,000 votes. So, no, overall, his performance was not better, and he did not win, but he will continue to sow doubts. That's all he can really do at this point, is sow doubts about the election. He was sowing doubts about immigrants. He was sowing doubts about safeguards during the pandemic, and there isn't anything out there that is a positive policy agenda that he could talk about. Go back and watch it. The only thing that he's saying in terms of a policy agenda that's proactive is rounding up immigrants, rounding up migrant workers. And again, we'll just, you know, have cows that go unmilked and, you know, factories that go unstaffed, meat packing plants and things like that. There were plenty of Republicans up on stage with Trump, whether they, you know, support him fully or not. Eric Hovde was one of them, saying, quote, "They're crushing the working class. How about the border? President Trump showed you the numbers. He had the border completely under control." Again, fact check. The border was not completely under control. It's very easy to memory hole these things, but President Trump, during his term, had a Republican Congress. He had a Republican majority in the House, a Republican majority in the Senate. They built a few miles of wall, but they did no overall comprehensive border security, no comprehensive overall immigration reform.
Pat, they shut down the government during that time because they couldn't figure that problem out.
Exactly. It led to a government shutdown.
The longest government shutdowns during unified control ever, if I recall correctly.
And what did they work on instead? Tax cuts for the rich. That's the one thing they did get done.
And earlier this year, there was a bipartisan effort that was led by a conservative senator from Oklahoma, as well as Democratic senators. And instead of actually passing a comprehensive border policy, Donald Trump told his supporters in Congress, you need to tank this. You need to make this not pass.
And that's where we are, because he wants to get credit wherever he can, even though he's not going to get anything done if he were to get elected. But he loves the praise. Vivek Ramaswamy was there and compared Donald Trump to George Washington, saying he's the George Washington of our moment. And finally, and I can't believe I have to pass this along, but Trump spoke about Lake Michigan, which he described as beautiful. Much better than sitting on the Pacific or the Atlantic, which has sharks. I'll take the one without sharks. You'd think he wouldn't be dwelling on sharks after getting all that grief for that rambling story.
But his mind is in 1980s, and Jaws is a very scary movie, Pat. So yes, give me the shark-free water.
The electric motor on the boat that might electrocute him, so he's got to choose being electrocuted or jumping in with the sharks. Or something like that. All right, enough of that. We're going to talk to the positive aspects of a good civics education in our homeroom segment next on Up North News Radio.
This is 93.5 The Tap. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Our Wisconsin state senators and representatives may not be in session in Madison, but they're still hearing from constituents all across the state. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. One item that seems to be popping up more frequently these days, urban sprawl and its consumption of Wisconsin farmland. Wisconsin Senator Joan Baldwig is hearing from constituents. She said whether it's a solar array project that's going in your neighborhood or a new housing project, she says Wisconsin's got to take a look at different options that help to keep farmland in place.
There's a federal program that Wisconsin maybe needs to get on board with. It's called PACE, the Purchase of Agricultural Conservation Easement. So it's not purchasing the land. It's providing an easement to that landowner so that they can keep farming and keep that land as good productive farmland.
That's Wisconsin Senator Joan Baldwig from Marcus and chair of the Senate Agriculture Committee. She said one piece of business that got finished last term was basically creating a bill that allows Wisconsin's Towns Association and our County Association to work a little bit more cooperatively when it comes to thinking long term on how rural land in their communities is being used. Not towns versus counties, but towns with counties. Welcome to today's Merck Minute with special guest Austin Snook, U.S. Dairy Marketing Manager for Merck Animal Health. Some exciting things happening at Merck Animal Health. Austin, talk to me about the new M-Power product and the dairy portfolio that Merck Animal Health has built. It's different from other industry portfolios, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really having all these solutions under one entity looking at biopharma, monitoring and identification allows us to offer a fully integrated experience for customers so that each of our products amplifies the other to help them all work together and work better than ever before. And so really that translates to more efficiency and better performance for dairy producers.
Excellent. Thanks, Austin. Austin Snook, U.S. Dairy Marketing Manager for Merck Animal Health, along with us. That's today's Merck Minute. Learn more at mpowerdairy.com. And for farms in Wisconsin that want to try to expand, it can be a very, very complicated permitting process. Now, Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative has announced they're rolling out a brand new program they call Maestro that will provide farms with tools and resources to help them navigate the permitting process. You can find out more about the Maestro program and other food-related news items on our website, MidwestFarmReport.com. That's a quick snapshot of what's happening in food news on a Wednesday. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy and highs in the low 70s. A chance of a shower tonight, otherwise mostly cloudy and a low of 57. Showers and thunderstorms Thursday, highs back to the mid-70s. For Thursday night, showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly cloudy and lows near 62.
It's 64 at our studios.
Impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies, because feeling full can sound like this.
How did the interview go?
I did it! I got the job! I can't believe it!
And like this.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project!
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations!
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, singing duo 7,000 Apart joins me in studio as they prepare for their big appearance at Summerfest, and comedian Mike Siegel joins to discuss 80s TV shows.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
Did you know it is National Pollinator Week? where you can be the change. See what I did there? And you can share our post over on the Up North News Facebook page. Learn all about how much of our food supply depends on pollinators. And pollinators are more than just the bees. There's, you know, some other critters involved as well. And the population is threatened more than ever. So look for that series of graphics over on the Up North News Facebook page. Time for our homeroom segment. And a pretty simple statement from me. If you are interested in preserving democracy, you need to preserve and enhance civics education, because it's what gives you an informed citizenry that appreciates government, appreciates its functions. But to do that, you've got to have strong civics education programs, support the teachers, the materials, everything that they need. So this week in our homeroom segment, to tell us all about it, we're joined by Kate Ullman, who is with the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition. She's a founder and co-chair. And co-chair Michael Blau joins us as well. Kate, you're in the Ashland area, right?
That's correct.
And Michael, you are where?
I'm calling in from the Madison area.
All right. Good to have you both here. Thank you so much. I may have stolen some of your thunder, but I would like to hear it in you know, your words as well, because, I mean, I'm one of those oldsters that, you know, they called it social studies back in the day, and then eventually we saw the term civics used more and more. But, Kate, you know, the website that you have here, civicswi.org, starts out quite cleanly. Civics education is the bedrock of democratic decision making. What's that based on? Why do you say that?
Well, I think that if you look back at the history of public schools in the United States, one of the major purposes of public education is to create an informed citizenry so we can govern ourselves through a democracy. And so I think that, you know, that's widely shared as a belief across the political spectrum, that that's a critical role. It's not the only purpose of our schools, but it's really a critical purpose of public education.
And Michael, along that same point, it is so easy, we learned until, you know, about 8 years ago or so, it is so easy to take democracy for granted, that what we have here will always be here, even though we know we had a civil war and we know we've gone through strife, and yet we always assume, well, everything will be fine in the end. And I think more than ever, we've learned, looking at other countries, that isn't necessarily so. And I'm not saying that to be pessimistic, but Michael, I think people see the value in a civics education more than ever as a result of recent events.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I have a 12-month-old baby boy at home. And, you know, I think about this often now, is there are students and children being born in hospitals all around America that will live to see the 22nd century, right? The next century. And what form of government will we leave them? What kind of land will they live in? And, you know, those are open questions, I think, in a lot of our minds. And we have seen a pretty substantial decrease in younger generations being able to identify the essential need of democratic decision making, of constitutional knowledge and a constitutional form of government, and the kind of bedrock principles that undergird all of that, rule of law. And I think, you know, I think about this really quite often. I think, you know, FDR gave a beautiful speech at the commissioning of Mount Rushmore, which was, you know, supposed to be there 1,000 years. And let us meditate for a moment on what the people of America will look like 1,000 years from now. What kind of government will they have? What kind of land will they live in? And I think about those words all the time now, when I consider our democracy. And I do think that it's something, you know, we really do have to make the case for democracy, especially for the younger generation, because we have disinvested from public education, from civic education, especially, and we do not prioritize it, recognize it, or incentivize it in the same way that we have in the past, actually, and the way that we should and need to.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, so much more stock was put in, you know, parenting, and parents would hammer that home to kids to appreciate, you know, do those lessons and learn about government. Kate, I'm going to make an overtly political comment in order to set you up for the nonpartisan aspect of this. But one of the most infuriating things I've heard over the past few months was when Senator Ron Johnson said something about liking the fact that the current Congress was not productive, basically saying in so many words, well, if we were just here to pass bills, we'd be like Democrat light. And it was just infuriating because it doesn't matter who's in power. The whole point of being in government service is to serve, is to do, to recognize problems, to solve them and things like that. And it just tells me that, again, you are looking, as it says on your website, to strengthen nonpartisan civics and government education in schools. All is to say, Kate, that government service is not, and functional government service is in no way a partisan act.
Yeah, I think that's a really critical part of our work and something that we have worked hard from the start and, you know, continue to focus on building a coalition that is very diverse geographically, politically, economically, racially, so that what we're doing is bringing together people from all across the state, all different types of people from all parts of the political spectrum who just, you know, support the basic idea that we should strengthen civics education, because we really do fundamentally believe that it is a nonpartisan goal to teach our young people about democracy and about sort of the foundations of democracy that Michael mentioned, but also, you know, about how to be an effective citizen and the skills that they need later in life. And actually even immediately as young people to participate in their communities in a whole variety of different ways. And, you know, so civic engagement, it goes beyond voting. And so I think that we, you know, like you said, it's problematic if civics education is seen as something that is partisan. But luckily in our state, I actually think we're well positioned because there have been strong voices on both sides of the aisle at the state level supporting civics education in our schools. So I think that, you know, at this moment, we're in a position where in Wisconsin, it's not seen as a partisan position to say that you want to strengthen civic learning.
I think that it would not necessarily be oversimplistic to say that the point of civics education is so that there is civic engagement by all of us. Of the whole part of the whole reason we started Up North News, part of the whole reason that Sage Weil and others started Civic Media was all about civic engagement, which Michael is not just voting. It's really, you know, democracy as a participatory sport. Can you talk a bit about more about, you know, what listeners who their civics classes were long ago, but what kinds of things can they be doing to be more engaged to increase their civic engagement?
Well, for the listeners, I guess to start on that point, I do think it'd be wonderful for you to be able to go to the WCLC website and learn a little bit about some of the civic organizations that exist in Wisconsin. These are phenomenal. Mostly, pretty much all of them are nonpartisan organizations. Some of them are right leaning, some of them are left leaning, but there are a lot of really good organizations that are doing phenomenal work in the state. And there's obviously phenomenal organizations around the nation that do really great work. I think knowing about those, recognizing those, talking to local leaders, school boards about those kinds of resources, and asking questions like, you know, do we require a civics course to graduate? What does our civics class look like? What does our government class look like? Because there is great variation. So your district may be very different than the neighboring district. Maybe they're very different than some of the larger, you know, the Madisons and the Milwaukee districts. So just knowing the state of play is really important. And I think you'll find pretty quickly that there's a lot of variation, but there's definitely great room to grow and connect and deepen connections with these organizations. And doing something like that can lead you into being able to give financially. That's great, but volunteering your time is really invaluable. I will say from Kate's organization, the Legislative Semester, and my organization that I now work for, that I was a product of, the Center for Civic Education, We the People, the Citizen and the Constitution, has a simulated congressional hearing that we do in the state of Wisconsin and most states. And we need that runs on volunteers. Students present in front of like a simulated congressional hearing. Kate, obviously, the Legislative Semester does a whole bunch of good simulative experiences around the legislative session. And other organizations in our coalition also have great experiential learning pieces that we want more students to be a part of, because that sticks with you. Once you have an experience of engaging, not just in like a volunteer way or just like you would with a food drive one-off, how you experience democracy by doing democracy, by collaborating, by working with others, and by compromising, and on a base understanding of rules and principles, constitutional norms, those types of things that sticks with you for the rest of your life. And I say that as a product of We the People, as I said. But there's tons of great organizations and great work to plug into, and knowing about it is the first step.
I'd add as well that when I define civic engagement, sometimes it's like, well, you know what your school board or town board is doing, not just when you're angry at them, which seems to be the only time that people show up at some of these meetings. Kate, from a civics education standpoint, can you kind of give us a feel for what does beginning civics look like? What grade level, what are they learning about in the earliest forms of civics education? And then what does it look like? What's the best possible model for it to look like when those little kids become high school graduates?
That's a really great question. And it's something that our coalition is focusing on this year, because we want to make sure that people don't see civics education as only a high school government class. That really it's something that happens K-12, and it can happen across different content areas as well, because a lot of the skills that students need to be civically engaged are skills that they can start learning really young, and that they can learn in a whole variety of different content areas. So that just includes really basic things that young kids can do in the classroom, working together with all of their peers so that they can learn to get along and navigate their disagreements. And, you know, that's going to look different in a kindergarten classroom than in a high school classroom. But ideally, by the time students are in high school, they're able to really dig into weighty issues together, because they've developed those skills to, you know, navigate disagreement with civility, which is just one of the core things that we all need to be effectively participating in any kind of civic engagement, whether that's at the school board level or with your community and talking about political issues or as a voter.
Navigate disagreements with civility. Somebody carve that puppy in stone, because that's really what we need such a refresher in, Kate.
Yeah, and I also just wanted to highlight, Michael alluded to this, but Wisconsin does not require students to take a government or civics class to graduate. So while I just said it's not only about a high school course, and it really is K-12 across subject areas, we see all teachers as civics educators, but a high school government course is a really focused way that students can learn, especially as they're nearing voting age, more about their role as a citizen, the foundations of democracy, and also learn about current issues. So Wisconsin's one of only 11 states that does not require students to take a government course.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that. And it's been 15 years since I was in the legislature, but now I suddenly consider my time there to have been a part of a failure, that I didn't know about that and couldn't have done more to encourage that. I'm absolutely stunned by that. Michael, if folks would like to learn more about the coalition, supporting civics education, encouraging it in their local school districts and more, what's the best way for folks to learn more about the work that you're doing?
Well, visit our website, the WCLC, the civicswi.org. And again, to this back to this point on educating yourself about what the social studies requirements are for you in your district, in your home school, but also in the state. This is a really big and important thing, and this drives a lot of our work, and a lot of our mission is advocating so that every single student that walks into a school building cannot graduate out of that school building without interacting with civic knowledge, skills, and dispositions, practicing those things so that they're equipped for being a citizen when they graduate.
That is so necessary. Michael Blau and Kate Ullman from the Wisconsin Civic Learning Coalition, thank you so much. When Chris Hambuck Boyle told me about you, Kate, and doing this segment, she was right. We could do this all day. So come back again soon. We'll talk more.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, and I think we'd be happy to come back, and there is plenty more to talk about.
All right. Coming up next, Todd Alba talks about the live show he's doing for Juneteenth next. You're up north. In honor of Paul Abdul's birthday, we thought we'd bring on Opposites Attract and let you decide. Is it about me and Todd? Is it about me and Luke? Is it about Luke and Todd? Or does Earl Ingram play a role, who I see lurking in the background of Todd Alba's live shot from Baraboo, right?
Exactly. Oxner Park here in beautiful Baraboo, Wisconsin, Patrick. We are live as Earl's about to get underway here in just a few minutes. You can see him preparing. Wave, Earl. Give us a wave. There he is. Look at that. Earl Ingram. He'll be on live across many of our civic media stations coming up here at the top of the hour. But we are here, Pat and Luke, to celebrate Juneteenth. And it's the first ever celebration of Juneteenth here in Baraboo. Our chief engineer, Corey Hartman, to help facilitate that. Of course, he lives here in Baraboo, one of our stations here in Baraboo, Wisconsin. So we got set up just in time. The rain is just starting to fall, but we're going to be dry. But come on out if you're in Southwest Wisconsin. Going to be bouncy houses for the kids. Going to be music. The mayor of Baraboo is going to be here. And I think it's just great that a town of 10,000 people in Southwest Wisconsin is taking the time to celebrate a very important now national holiday of Juneteenth.
And it's very much a two-part occasion, because obviously there's the celebratory aspect of it, the end of enslavement in the United States at the end of the Civil War, but also leads to those very serious discussions of, you know, how far have we come since then in good ways, but then how far we still have to go. There is still a legacy from slavery, whether people want to recognize it or not. Despite a lot of us, our families came here after the Civil War. But that doesn't mean we're not part of a nationwide, you know, legacy of, shall we say, self-examination and self-reflection of what we are as a country. And can't we be doing better than we are now?
I think you're absolutely right. Earl and I talked about that. You know, we came up here and Earl never been to Devil's Lake State Park. And let me tell you something. I mean, Earl told me he was pushing 70 and pushing it pretty hard, but he was kicking my butt going up the rocks there, hiking at Devil's Lake yesterday. And we walked along the beach, and there were white kids and black kids and Latino kids and people and families all over Wisconsin. And we talked about the fact that the more that, you know, we visit one another in our home areas, the more we understand where we each come from, then we start talking to each other as friends. We start talking to each other's communities, and we start healing those wounds little by little. But it takes all of us listening to one another, and I think getting to each other as humans.
Yeah. Let's roll into that as well, our discussion we just had about the value of teaching civics in our schools, and my not knowing until 5 minutes ago that, you know, high school graduates in Wisconsin, they're not required to take a government education class. And so, boy, when I look out sometimes at some of the, I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it, I look at some of the chuckleheads out there and go, how are you thinking this about whatever particular topic it is? I'm now realizing one of the shortcomings took place when they were younger and we weren't giving them a chance to appreciate how government works when it's done right and done respectfully by people who see themselves as stewards rather than, you know, 24/7 partisan politicians.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I had some great teachers on public school in Richland Center and really great social studies teacher and civics teachers. You know, but I graduated in 88. As Luke likes to remind me, I'm an old guy. But, you know, I think they're, I mean, look, I'm all for the AP classes and all that, but I don't believe that a half us or a semester of civics is going to hurt anybody. But we have to have a legislature, a Republican legislature, an entire legislature, who is willing to put in the money to school districts to teach that. Because remember, every time you put a mandate, you guys know this, but every time you put a mandate on a school district, they got to come up with that money to hire the teacher, to get the benefits, so on and so forth. So I think you're having civic media, right? We should be all about civics. But you're absolutely right, Pat. This is something we need. People need to understand their government and how it works.
Yeah, to get back then to Juneteenth and the discussions you're having today, and I don't know if you've outlined, you know, particular topics, but getting back to, you know, how do we deal with you know, the ongoing instances of, you know, institutional racism, things that aren't overt, but they're still subtle. And yet at the same time, we see these crass and nakedly political attacks by Robin Voss and others on things like, you know, DEI, that somehow diversity, equity, and inclusion is a bad thing. I imagine there's going to be a few conversations around the country today about, you know, do you go forward on the current path and, you know, support things like DEI, or do you say, well, maybe we need to come at this from another approach?
Yeah, I think you're right, Pat. And I think Pastor Antoine, one of the local pastors here who has helped coordinate this along with the mayor of Baraboo and the Baraboo Chamber of Commerce, I think they got it absolutely right. You know, I grew up, 35 miles as the crow flies in Richland Center. And as you can imagine, about a 95% white community out here. And I think what these local folks have done here at Baraboo is absolutely right. Let's bring people together with music, with some educational speakers, an interactive tent, which is going to be setting up right where those picnic tables are at. If you look behind me here, they have a stage in the back. They're going to have all kinds of music. They're going to have food stands. And this is all about bringing people out and just getting to know one another as people, and just kind of lightly give some education and let's start a dialogue. And I think once you do that, then you can have deeper discussions. And that's where walls start coming down and improvement starts being made. But, you know, like we found so much, whether it's Trigby and I or Jane and I or you and I, Pat, and now with Earl, as you travel Wisconsin, the more we travel and talk to people, the more we're alike than we are different. And we just have to find that common ground, have discussions, and then I think we make progress.
I have a serious question for Luke in light of what we're hearing here from Todd and what we're seeing from you. Why do we let you come back to the studio? You are a master of these remote broadcasts. You were incredible in Eau Claire and in Amory last week. You are on the road being interactive yet again with the listeners. I don't know how we don't just have a permanent road show for you and just keep you on the road perpetually. Not that you're running from the law or anything, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know you that well. But
who do you think keeps pushing him out and telling him to go more places? I know.
Well, here Luke is adding new studios. We should have take his key card away. We need fewer studios, less studio time for Todd Alba.
Jane and I were talking about like the old Charles Kuralt days on the road, just getting like a mini RV or whatever.
Charles Kuralt, just it's not the example it used to be, unless you've got, you know, families in two different parts of the state that don't know about each other. But that's a story for another time.
Anyway,
on the road with Todd Alba continues along with Earl Ingram coming up shortly all across the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'll see you later on your fine program as well.
Yeah,
Todd, thank you very much. Have a great day. And Mr. Mathers, we are going to have a lot to say about tonight's Top Chef finale.
That we are.
Up. Yep. We'll talk about that at 6:30 tomorrow morning and again at our usual 7:50. But in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we come to you live from Baraboo, Wisconsin for Juneteenth. Our friend and colleague Earl Ingram joins us. You don't want to miss it. See you then.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Here's to experiencing it all this summer in Wisconsin. Every deliciously cheesy, rockin', magical, fireworks-filled, festival-loving moment. There's Cheese Curd Fest in Ellsworth, Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, Festival of the Arts in Stevens Point, and the Renaissance Fair in Bristol. Honor the Earth Powwow in Hayward, Mile of Music in Appleton, Venetian Fest, Bratfest, Summerfest. So many fests for your whole crew. Find them all at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS.